Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Ugly Truth by Jeff Kinney. Narrated by Ramon de Ocampo.
September. Thursday. It's been almost 2.5 weeks since me and my ex-best friend, Rowley Jefferson, had our big fight. To be honest with you, I thought he would have come crawling back to me by now, but for some reason, that hasn't happened. I'm actually starting to get a little concerned, because school starts back up in a few days, and if we're going to get this friendship back on track, something needs to happen quick. If me and Rowley really are through, that would stink, because the two of us had a pretty good thing going. Like how he'd pull me up the hill while I sat on my skateboard drinking a soda. Now that our friendship is history, I'm in the market for a new best friend. The problem is, I invested all my time in Rowley, and I don't have anyone lined up to take his place. The two best options I have at this point are Christopher Brownfield and Tyson Sanders, but each of those guys has his own issues. I hung out with Christopher for the last few weeks of the summer, mostly because he's a really excellent mosquito magnet. But Christopher is more of a summertime friend than a school year friend. Tyson is nice enough, and we like the same video games. But he pulls his pants all the way down when he uses the urinal, and I don't know if I can ever get past that. The only other kid my age who's not paired up with someone is Fregley, but I ruled him out as best friend material a long time ago when he said, "I'll bet I can fit your whole foot in my mouth." Anyway, I'm still keeping the door open a crack for Rowley, just in case. But if he wants to save this friendship, he'd better do something fast. Because the way things stand, he's not going to come out looking very good in my autobiography. Greg Heffley, A Life, by Greg Heffley. When you turn to chapter 8, Childhood, it would start with, "I used to live near this kid. I think his name was Rupert, or Roger, or something. With my luck, though, I'll go on to be rich and famous, and Rowley will still find a way to ride my coattails, like maybe writing his own autobiography called I Used to Be Friends with Greg Heffley by Rowley Jefferson, or something like that. Saturday. The reason I don't see things changing between me and Rowley is because he's already found himself a replacement friend. Or to be more accurate, his parents did. For the past few weeks, Rowley's been hanging out with this teenager named Brian. Whenever I go by Rowley's house, he's out in his front yard throwing a football or a frisbee with a guy who looks like he's in high school or college. Well, I did some poking around and found out that this Brian guy isn't just some normal kid from the neighborhood. He's part of a company called Cool Brian, which is sort of like a big brother for hire kind of thing. In fact, I'd be willing to bet money this guy's name isn't even really Brian. I mean, he drives a van that says, "Cool Brian, wholesome mentors for growing boys. Call 555-6739. Who does that? Mom said she thinks the Cool Brian thing is a great idea because it gives kids a role model they can look up to. That makes me kind of mad because the way I see it, I'm Rowley's role model. I mean, who else would teach Rowley how to set up a tripwire for his parents when they're getting the mail? Good times. And now Rowley's parents are paying some guy to do what I've been doing all these years for free. The thing that really burns me is that Rowley probably doesn't even know his parents are paying this guy to spend time with him. And I don't think it would bother Rowley if he did know the truth. Today, I saw Rowley hanging out with a different Cool Brian. So Rowley's regular guy must have had the day off. But I could tell Rowley didn't even notice. Tuesday. Today was the first day of school. I don't want to jinx things, but it's looking like this could be a great year for me. In homeroom, we got our textbooks for the semester. My school can't afford to get new books every year, so we usually get hand-me-downs. But when you get a book that 10 kids had before you, it makes it kind of hard to do any actual learning. There's more doodles than words on every page. Usually, I have really bad luck when it comes to previous book owners. Last year, I got a math book that had belonged to Brian Goot. And that didn't exactly up my cool factor in the hallways, because Brian is a notorious nerd. But this year, I totally lucked out. When I got my math book, I found out it used to belong to Jordan Jury. Jordan Jury is the most popular kid in the grade above me, so carrying his textbook around should translate into some major popularity points. One reason Jordan is so popular is because he always has these big blowout parties, and it's really hard to get invited. But I figure this algebra book could be just the thing I need to get on his radar. Speaking of popular kids, I sat near Bryce Anderson and his group of friends at lunch today. Bryce is basically the Jordan Jury of my grade, and he's got a bunch of cronies who are always going along with everything he says. And those guys are loyal to Bryce no matter how dumb he makes them look. See, Bryce Anderson has the right idea. He doesn't actually need a best friend, because he's got a bunch of lackeys who basically worship him. The reason me and Rowley didn't make it is because we were equal partners in our friendship, and I don't think that kind of model has a chance of working out. Friday. At school today, I heard Rowley tell some kid he was going to a rock concert tonight. I admit I was a little jealous, since I've never been to a real concert myself. But when I found out Rowley was going to see this guy named Joshy, who all the girls scream for, I was glad I wasn't invited. Rowley's going to be the only guy there. Still, it kind of irks me that Rowley is having more fun than I am. In fact, it seems like everyone is having more fun than me these days. There are some kids in my grade who post their pictures online. And from the look of things, they're all having a way better time than I am. At cheerleading camp, hanging out with their friends, eating ice cream, singing karaoke to their stuffed bears. I don't want people thinking my life is lame, so I decided to take some pictures to show how great things are going for me. All you really need is a digital camera and a photo editing program, and you can make it look like you're having a total blast. I stuck my picture in all these cool places, like watching beach volleyball, line dancing, pillow fighting with the girls, and inner tubing with cool people. Tonight, I was right in the middle of creating a wild New Year's Eve party scene when I got busted by Mom. Oh well. Mom won't let me post photos on the computer anyway, because of privacy and all that. Or maybe it's because she learned her lesson after letting my older brother Roderick post his pictures, mostly with his band, Loaded Diaper. Roderick's been trying to get a job so he can buy a new drum set, but nobody will hire him. Mom told him that nowadays employers look up the people they're thinking of hiring and that his pictures are probably hurting his chances. So Roderick replaced his band pictures with one where he's looking serious, wearing glasses, and reading an encyclopedia. I don't think it's going to work. Wednesday. This year, everyone in my grade has to take advanced health, which covers some top-secret stuff that I guess they didn't think we were ready for until now. In the first few classes, the boys and girls were mixed together. But today, Nurse Powell said she was going to split us up. She sent the girls down to Mrs. Gordon's room, and then she put in a video for us boys to watch. From what I could tell, the video was at least 30 years old, so I'm sure Dad watched the same exact tape when he was my age. It was called Say Hello to the Brand New You, Boys Edition. I'm not going to describe everything that they showed in the video, because it was actually pretty disgusting. If you ask me, some of that stuff doesn't really belong in a classroom. Rowley didn't even make it through the whole video. He passed out at the 2-minute mark when they said the word perspiration. To be honest with you, I don't know if Rowley's ready for this stuff. He's basically like a little kid. He told me once that he avoids the older kids at school because he's afraid he's gonna catch puberty. In fact, Now that I think about it, I haven't seen Cool Brian for a while. So I wonder if Rowley's avoiding him, too, because he thinks he's contagious. The same kind of thing happened in last year's health class when they did a smoking unit. The teacher said that you never know who's going to offer you a cigarette, and that it could even be your best friend. Well, after Rowley heard that, he wouldn't even walk on the same side of the street as me for a solid month. Believe me, I don't need some teacher to tell me it's not cool to smoke. My grandfather convinced me of that last year on Thanksgiving. I caught him actually standing on the toilet trying to sneak a smoke by blowing it out the vent on the ceiling. Desperation, for sure. Anyway, I think Rowley's just one of those kids who are always going to be a few years behind everyone else, maturity-wise. Rowley doesn't even know how to tie his shoes yet, because he's the kind of person who has Velcro everything. Last year, Rowley's mom bought him sneakers with laces, and I can't even tell you how many times I had to bail him out. I guess it probably should have been a warning sign that my best friend was impressed that I knew how to tie my own shoes. Thursday. Today I was reading the comics in the newspaper, and I saw an ad that caught my attention. It read, "Could your child be the next Peachy Breeze kid? Open tryouts at the Liberty Street Mall this Saturday." It was for Peachy Breeze ice cream, and apparently they're looking for a new spokesperson. Peachy Breeze has those commercials on TV that run nonstop, with that kid with the freckles and the high-pitched voice who says, "Peachy Breeze is peachy keen." The Peachy Breeze kid used to be kind of cute, but over the years he's gotten a little seedy-looking, and he sounds a little more like, "Peachy Breeze is peachy keen." So I guess they're looking for someone to take his place. Well, I'd be perfect for the role. First of all, I love ice cream, so it wouldn't be hard for me to do the acting part. Second, I would be willing to miss a lot of school to fulfill my Peachy Breeze obligations. And they wouldn't have to worry about me getting too old for the part, because I'd take whatever I needed to take to stop growing. The only stumbling block I can see is that Dad hates the Peachy Breeze TV ads because he thinks the kid is annoying. So I don't think he'd be too thrilled if I became their new spokesperson. There's just something about that kid that gets on Dad's nerves. In fact, I think he hates the Peachy Breeze kid even more than he hates Little Cutie, which is saying something. Every time Dad sees a Peachy Breeze commercial on TV, he writes the Peachy Breeze people an angry letter saying that the ads drive him crazy and he'll never buy any of their products. A few weeks later, Dad gets a response in the mail from Peachy Breeze, and it's always the same thing: coupons for free ice cream. It's been going on like this for years, and if something doesn't change, we're going to have to get an extra freezer to hold all of our Peachy Breeze ice cream. Saturday. I told Mom about the Peachy Breeze kid contest last night, and she said it seemed like an exciting opportunity. But it turns out she was thinking of my little brother Manny when she said that. In fact, this morning Mom and Manny were ready to take off for the audition without me, but I caught them just in time. Mom seemed surprised that I wanted to be the Peachy Breeze kid, and said I might be too old for the part. At first, I thought that was ridiculous, but when I saw my competition at the mall, I could kind of see where she was coming from. I was about 2 feet taller than any of them. I figured I could charm the judges and get the job anyway. Plus, I had an edge, because I was the only kid trying out who could read a cue card. There must have been 200 kids in line, and I realized that if I wanted the job, I was going to have to come up with some sort of gimmick. So I decided I'd jump up and click my heels together when I said the Peachy Breeze slogan. But when it was finally my turn to go, things didn't work out the way I'd planned. When I clicked my heels together, I sort of dropped the ice cream off my cone. Then I landed in it. "Peachy Breeze is peachy..." Oops. I knew my chances of getting the part weren't good when the casting people sent me out the door, without even asking my name. Next. My opportunity was slipping away, so I did what I could to improve my odds by ranking on the next kid in line, telling the casting people, "I'm pretty sure the next kid in line is allergic to peaches." But it looks like the job is gonna go to a younger kid after all, which really stinks. You know, this isn't the first time I've been discriminated against because of my age, either. Last October, me and Rowley heard that our local news station was going to be at the Red Apple Farm to shoot footage of kids carving pumpkins and making scarecrows and stuff like that. We knew this was our big chance to be on TV, so we plopped ourselves in front of the news camera and really hammed it up. But it took about 5 seconds for the news people to kick us out. I heard the anchor say, "Hey, get those creepy kids out of there." Then they brought in some little kids to take our place, and they did the exact thing me and Rowley were doing. And I heard the anchor say, "I love it, ha ha." And sure enough, those kids were on the news that night. The truth is, this kind of thing has been going on for a long time. And where it's worst is in my own family. Up until I was 8 or 9, I was the star of every family gathering. It seemed like nobody could get enough of me. All the grandmas would gather around as I sang, "I'm a little teapot, short and stout." But after Manny was born, things really changed for me. "Here is my handle and here is my spout." "Oh, grow up." See, when you're a little kid, nobody ever warns you that you've got an expiration date. One day you're hot stuff, and the next day you're a dirt sandwich. I guess I can understand why Roderick's always so grumpy. It's been a long time since he was the center of attention, and believe me, he's not getting any cuter. The person who's lucky is Rowley. He's an only child, so at least he doesn't have to worry about being replaced by the next kid to come along. He can sing, "Just tip me over and pour me out," and his parents will forever yell, "Yay! Hooray, Rowley!" Monday. Tonight at dinner, Dad told us that his younger brother, Uncle Gary, got engaged to his girlfriend Sonia. I guess that's great news and all, but Uncle Gary has been married 3 times before, so this has kind of become a regular thing in our family. In fact, we don't even use growth charts at home, because we can just look at pictures from Uncle Gary's weddings to keep track of our progress. So I think everyone's a little burned out by now. When Uncle Gary got married the 3rd time, Mom didn't even bother to replace the picture of his 2nd wedding on the mantle. She just taped a photo of the new wife's head on top of the old one. Uncle Gary's not a bad guy or anything. He just rushes into these relationships too quickly. He got engaged to his 1st wife, Linda, 2 months after they met, and she didn't even find out what he did for a living until their wedding day, when he showed up in a dinosaur costume saying, "Sorry I'm late. The kids at the party wouldn't let me leave." And I heard Uncle Gary's 2nd wife, Charlene, thought he had a lot of money because of a miscommunication on their 2nd date, when she said, "I've got about $30,000 in the bank, maybe 40. And he said, "And I've got 45. It turns out Uncle Gary only had $45, not $45,000. But Charlene didn't find that out until it was time to pay the band at the wedding, when Uncle Gary asked, "Did you happen to bring your checkbook?" Dad's always saying Uncle Gary needs to grow up and stop acting like a child. But if I were Dad, I wouldn't hold my breath. Tuesday. I found out that Uncle Gary's wedding is going to be in November, and the reception will be at my great-grandmother Gammy's house, like last time. Gammy is 95 years old, but she still lives in the big house where she grew up. She's like the official head of the whole Heffley family. Gammy is one of the only people in the world who still writes letters, and when she writes you a letter, she expects you to write one back. I've tried to explain to Gammy that people my age don't know how to write letters with a stamp and a return address and all that stuff, but she doesn't want to hear it. At Uncle Gary's last wedding, Gammy handed me a starter letter, which began, "Dear Gammy," had a lot of space in the middle, and ended, "Love, Gregory." plus an envelope with her address and stamp on it so I wouldn't have any excuse not to write. But I still haven't filled it in and mailed it yet. So now every time I walk past my desk in my bedroom, I feel guilty. Gammy is always making you feel guilty. Last year at Thanksgiving, I put a whoopee cushion on her chair, and she sat on it, and it went, brrr. A few days later, everyone in the whole family got a handwritten apology letter from Gammy. It said, "Dear family, I am writing to apologize for the unfortunate incident that occurred shortly after our family concluded grace at our Thanksgiving celebration. As I have gotten older, I have found it more difficult to control my body, and I'm afraid my recent surgery may have contributed to my little slip. I hope that this unfortunate mishap does not become the lasting impression of what was otherwise a glorious and blessed occasion. Love, Gammy." Sometimes I wonder if Gammy is just messing with everyone and does this kind of thing on purpose. Last Easter, she invited the whole family to her house, but everyone had their own thing going on, and nobody went. Gammy called Dad on Easter Sunday and said she'd bought a scratch ticket and won the $10 million grand prize. Word got around the family quick, and everyone was at Gammy's house in no time flat. But it turned out the scratch ticket wasn't a winner after all. Gammy didn't seem too bothered that she wasn't a multimillionaire after all. And I have a feeling she got what she really wanted anyway. All of us coming to visit. She even made a ham in case, and I quote, "anybody stopped by." I hope I live to be 95 years old, because if I do, I guarantee you I'll be messing with people too. Like wearing my underwear on the outside of my pants, just to see if anyone notices. What makes me kind of nervous about going to Gammy's house in November is that it's time for me to get the talk. Every time someone in my family gets to be about my age, Gammy sits them down and talks to them about who knows what. I guess it's one of those elder wisdom kinds of things. The last person to get the talk from Gammy was Roderick, and now I'm next in line. I'm hoping Uncle Gary breaks off his engagement so we don't have to go down there, because the whole thing is making me a nervous wreck. Thursday. We've got a new math teacher at our school named Mrs. McElroy. She used to teach kindergarten, and I don't think she's real crazy about middle school kids. We have math right after phys ed, so by the time we get to Mrs. McElroy's room, everyone's all sweaty from exercising. Mrs. McElroy complained to the principal and said she can't teach when it smells like a monkey house in the room. So the principal said that from now on, us kids have to take showers after gym. Well, I can tell you that most of the boys in my class were not on board with that decision. The only person who was okay with it was Roger Townsend, but he was held back twice, and he's practically a man anyway. So the rest of us decided we were going to have to fake it. After phys ed was over yesterday, we all took turns getting our hair wet so it looked like we showered. I don't know if we really fooled Mrs. McElroy, but I don't think she's ever going to go into the boys' locker room and investigate. This showering situation reminds me of something that happened over the summer when me and Rowley were still friends. I used to go up to Rowley's house just about every day, but the problem was that I had to walk past Fragley's house each time. I remembered Roderick saying that a person could make it all the way from our house to the top of the hill by crawling through the drainage pipe. I decided to see if he was right. And believe it or not, he was. It was pretty dark and nasty in that drainage pipe, but it was totally worth crawling through it to avoid Fragley. When I headed back home, I went through the drainage pipe again. But I probably should have hosed off in the front yard or something, because Mom seemed suspicious when I walked through the front door. I knew Mom would have a fit if she found out I crawled through the drainage pipe, so I didn't say anything. But Mom told me I was going to have to take a shower before dinner. When I got out of the bathroom, there was something sitting on my bed. And get this, it was wrapped up like a present. It even had a bow. But when I opened it, I found a stick of deodorant and a book called What the Heck Just Happened to My Body? By Darlene Wade, PhD. I put the deodorant on my dresser, but I tossed the book in the trash. I'd seen that one before. Mom must have gotten the same book for Roderick when he was my age, and I found it in his junk drawer. And believe me, I do not need to see the pictures in that book a second time. And what's worse is that Mom made me the subject of her parenting column in our local paper that week. She didn't use my actual name, but I don't think it would have taken a detective to figure out who she was talking about. Puberty Can Be a Difficult Time, by Susan Heffley. When a child begins to experience the changes that come with adolescence, the transformation can be uncomfortable, awkward, or even frightening. But given the right guidance, a child can learn to welcome and even celebrate the transition into adulthood. My second-born son recently began his wondrous journey into his new yada, yada, yada. Sunday. Tonight, Mom called a house meeting. And whenever she does that, it's never good. The last time we had a house meeting, it was so she could complain about the situation in the bathroom. She said she was tired of having to clean the floor around the toilet because of our lousy aim. I knew exactly what she was talking about, too. One time, I actually missed the bus because I used the bathroom after Manny, and I swear I was stuck to the floor. All I can say is, I'm not the one causing the problem. When Roderick uses the bathroom, half the time he doesn't even turn on the light. Mom said the new rule was that us boys were going to have to sit down every time we used the bathroom, no matter what. But none of us guys like that idea. Roderick suggested we just buy a couple of urinals, since there are more of us than there are of her. Plus, that way, more than one person could go at the same time. But Mom said that would be tacky, and she used her veto power to shut his idea down. I thought tonight's house meeting was going to be a follow-up to the bathroom meeting, since nobody was following the sitting-down rule, and things are worse than ever. But this meeting was about something completely different. Mom told us that she was going back to school, and that she was going to start taking classes a few times a week. Well, I was totally caught off guard by this news. Mom's always there when I get home from school, and that's the way I like it. But Mom said that after all these years of staying home with us kids, she needs to do something that stimulates her mind. So she said she's going to take classes for a semester and see how it goes. I guess I can understand why Mom would want to branch out, because if I did the kinds of things she does every day, like take Mommy and Me dance class with kids and other moms, I'd probably be going bananas too. Mom said us men are going to have to make our own dinners a few nights a week and start doing chores that she usually takes care of herself. One of those chores is making lunches, and to be honest with you, I'm pretty happy that one is getting turned over to us. Mom writes a note on our lunch bags every day, and I can definitely live without that. Can you imagine the embarrassment of having scrawled on your lunch bag, "Dear Gregory, have a healthy, happy day. Love, Mom." Couldn't you just puke? Wednesday. Okay, so the first few nights with Mom away have been a disaster. We tried making dinner on our own on Monday, but none of us knew what we were doing. Manny was in charge of making the iced tea, but it was undrinkable since he stirred it with his bare hands. Roderick was in charge of cooking the roast beef, but he forgot to take the plastic wrap off before putting it in the oven, and Dad said, "Why is this meat shiny?" So we bagged the homemade meal idea and went out to eat. When we left the restaurant, Roderick spit his gum at some moths that were flying around, and he hit Dad by accident. Dad chased Roderick around the parking lot, but Roderick is actually pretty fast, and Dad couldn't catch him. Then Dad tripped over a curb and twisted his ankle. So Roderick had to drive Dad to the emergency room. When the doctor asked Dad how he hurt his ankle, Dad said he wasn't looking where he was going, and he stepped on one of Manny's trucks in the driveway. I can kind of understand why Dad didn't want to tell the truth. One time, I broke my wrist, and I told everyone I broke it in a fist fight. What really happened was that I tried to stand up after my legs fell asleep from sitting on the toilet too long. But I liked my version better. So it's only been a few days without Mom, and things are already starting to fall apart. We've got one serious injury so far, and who knows what's in store down the road. Thursday. We brought back leftovers from the spaghetti barn, and that's what we had for dinner tonight. Dad had to stay late at work, so he called Roderick and told him to warm up everyone's spaghetti in the microwave. Roderick gave me my plate first, and when he did, he said, "Careful, it's very hot." I blew on my spaghetti for a while to cool it down, but what I didn't know was that Roderick never actually heated my spaghetti in the microwave. He just pretended to. So when I bit into a meatball, it was ice cold. After that experience, I doubt I'll ever be able to eat leftovers again. And the bagged lunch thing isn't working out either. This week, Roderick was in charge of making lunches, and he wrote a note on my bag, just like Mom does. It said, "Dear Greg, make sure to change your diaper after lunch. Love, Mommy." I didn't even bother eating the sandwich, since I've never seen Roderick wash his hands even once. My chore for the week is laundry, and I can't wait until my shift is over. For the record, I think it should be illegal for a boy to have to fold his mother's underwear. Friday. One of the big changes with Mom going to school is that now Dad's in charge of helping me with my homework. No offense to Dad, but Mom is way better at homework help than he is. When Mom helps me do my homework, she basically gives me all the answers, and I'm in and out in 10 minutes. It's a whole different story with Dad. He wants to teach me how to do the work, and that's a lot more time-consuming. Plus, it's been a long time since Dad was in school, so I have to sit there and wait while he reads my textbooks and gets caught up. But math is the worst. I guess the way they teach math these days is totally different from the way they taught it when Dad was a kid. So he gets frustrated with the new rules and starts trying to teach me the way he learned it. "No, no, no. You need to add the numbers in this column and carry the 4. What does carry mean? Dad also licks his finger and his thumb to make it easier for him to turn the pages. And when he does that, I try and keep track of which pages he turns so I don't touch his spit. But with all those numbers in my head, it doesn't leave a lot of room for math facts. I can tell when I've done something wrong, because Dad gets kind of frustrated with me and breathes real heavy out of his nose. Whew, whew, whew. So I've learned to put a dish towel on my arm whenever we're working on algebra. By the time it's over, 2 hours have gone by and it's time for me to go to bed. All I can say is, I hope Mom wraps up her classes pretty quick, because I'm a person who really needs his TV time at night. Monday. This math thing is becoming a problem. We have standardized testing coming up at my school, and I heard that the teachers won't get their bonuses unless we get good scores. So there's a lot of pressure on us kids, which kind of stinks. I remember back in kindergarten, math used to be really fun, because we added one chocolate chip cookie plus another chocolate chip cookie and got two chocolate chip cookies. Mrs. McElroy says that if we don't do well on the test, we'll lose our budget and music class will turn into detention, or something like that. But I don't think kids are really getting the message. A few weeks ago, we had a math quiz, and Mrs. McElroy said it was open notebook, which meant we could use our notes and textbooks to help us out. Then she left the classroom to take care of something, and the second she stepped out the door, it was total chaos. Practically everybody failed the quiz because people were using their notebook paper and books as ammunition. So, based on that episode, I don't think Mrs. McElroy had better make any big plans for how she's going to spend her bonus. October. Tuesday. Tonight, Dad walked up to me while I was sitting on the couch, and he seemed bent out of shape about something. He wanted to know why I didn't bring out the recycling bin this morning like he asked me to. I told him he must be confused, because he never said anything to me about the recycling. But he said he asked me to do it last night while I was playing video games. And to be honest with you, that did seem a little familiar. If I did forget, it wasn't my fault. I actually have a really great system for remembering things. You know how some people leave notes for themselves when they need to remember something? Well, I think that's a lot of work, and it's a waste of paper, too. So let's say I'm in bed, and Mom walks into my room and tells me I have to bring a permission slip to school in the morning. I don't get out of bed and write a note. I just throw one of my pillows across the room. Then, when I wake up in the morning and go to walk out the door, I see the pillow and think, "Hey, what's this pillow doing here?" Then I remember, "Oh yeah, I have to bring a permission slip to school." See what I mean? It's totally foolproof. Now that I think of it, I did leave myself a reminder to take out the recycling. I specifically remember putting my socks on the TV before I went to bed to remind myself in the morning. And if Dad did something to mess up my system, like taking my socks off the television, he's only got himself to blame. But Dad wouldn't let it go. He said now that I'm getting older, I need to start being more responsible. I've heard this sort of thing from Dad before. The last few weeks of the summer, our neighbor, Ms. Grove, hired me to take care of her plants while she was on a business trip. Well, I did it for the first few days, and then I guess you could say I got busy with other things. When Dad asked me how the plants were doing, I realized I hadn't been over there in at least a week. I went to grab Ms. Grove's key so I could water her plants, but the key wasn't in its usual spot. I practically turned our house upside down looking for that key, but I couldn't find it. It turns out the reason I couldn't find the key was because it wasn't in our house. I'd left it at Ms. Grove's, and she found it when she got back from her trip. Sticking right in the doorknob. Ms. Grove was pretty mad that her key was in the front door, but the way I see it, she should have been happy nobody robbed her house. She was mad about her plants, too, because unfortunately, most of them didn't make it. I suggested that maybe she should buy a cactus or another plant that doesn't need a lot of water to survive. That way, everything would be fine if I lost her key the next time she went on a business trip. But Ms. Grove said she wouldn't hire me again, even if her life depended on it. Then she sent me home without paying, which stinks because I really did spend a lot of time looking for that key. Anyway, I think that episode is still fresh in Dad's mind, and that's why I'm hearing this responsibility thing again. Hopefully, Dad will leave my socks on the television next time around, and things won't get to this point. Thursday. Well, Dad is really serious about me taking on more responsibility, and the first thing he wants me to do is start waking myself up in the morning. That's actually a real problem, because I depend on him to wake me up. He stands at the foot of my bed, clapping his hands at 7:30 in the morning, saying, "Hop, hop, hop, let's go, let's go." That's the way we've been doing it for years, and I really don't see any reason to change things now. Dad said that if I didn't learn how to wake myself up with an alarm clock, then I'm not going to know how to do it when I go off to college. But I always figured that would be the way me and Dad would stay in touch. He would call me on my cell phone every morning to wake me up. "Hello? Hop, hop, hop. Let's go. Let's go." Yesterday was the first day I tried to wake myself up, and it didn't work out so well. My alarm went off and all, but the sound just worked its way into my dream. A cute little bunny that went, "Meep, meep, meep." And today didn't go any better. I set my alarm to radio and tuned it to a classical music station because I didn't want to hear that annoying beep first thing in the morning. But the music didn't wake me up either. I just kept right on dreaming. The problem is, without an actual human being waking me up, my brain is always going to find some excuse to keep sleeping. But I think I might have figured out a solution to this alarm clock situation. I found one of those old-style wind-up clocks in the storage room today, and those clocks make a huge racket when they go off. I tested it out to see if it still worked, and sure enough, it did. Brrrring! I don't think anyone could sleep through a noise like that. The only problem is that the clock doesn't have a snooze bar, so I'm worried I'll shut it off and fall back asleep. So tonight, I hid the clock under my bed. This way, when the alarm goes off, I'll have to get up to find the clock, and then I'll be up for the day. Friday. It turns out the new alarm clock caused some new problems. With that wind-up clock ticking under my bed, I felt like I was sleeping on top of a bomb that was about to go off, so the stress kept me awake half the night. Tick, 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 tick. I sleepwalked through my day at school, which was fine until we had an assembly. We were lined up to go into the auditorium, and I was leaning against the wall. But I must have fallen asleep for half a second, because my hand slipped and I accidentally set off the fire alarm. The whole school had to evacuate, and 3 minutes later, there were a bunch of fire trucks out front. After they found out there was no fire, they let everyone back into the school. The principal got on the loudspeaker and said that whoever set off the alarm was going to be suspended and that they should turn themselves in. I don't know much, but what I do know is that you shouldn't announce what the punishment is going to be before you ask people to turn themselves in. So I decided it would be smart to keep quiet and let this all blow over. After third period, a rumor started going around school that the fire alarm squirts out invisible liquid when you pull the handle, and that the teachers had some sort of special X-ray wand they could use to see the liquid on somebody's hand. So it was only a matter of time before they found the culprit. Then everyone started wondering if it was the teachers who started the rumor, and it was just a trick to see which kid would go to the bathroom first to wash his hands. So that got everyone really paranoid. Then nobody would go to the bathroom, and everyone who actually needed to go decided to just hold it until the end of the day, sweating it out, tapping their feet, and crossing their legs in agony. The principal eventually had to shut the school down early because nobody was washing their hands, and we're right in the middle of flu season. Mom was off at the library studying, so I had to call Dad at work and ask him to come pick me up from school early. And he didn't seem too happy about it. But if he didn't make me wake myself up, none of this would have even happened. Wednesday. They're starting a new unit in our health class called The Facts of Life. And apparently it covers all the stuff they've been dancing around for the past couple of months. They sent permission slips home, and if you don't get yours signed, you're not allowed to even be in the classroom for the rest of the semester. I really don't like this permission slip thing. Mom only lets me watch G-rated movies, so I know there's no way she'll let me be in the class. To get around that problem, I typed up a fake note and taped it on top of the actual permission slip. It read, "I give my child permission to do extra homework. Parent to sign below." Mom took one look and said, "Now that's an easy decision," and signed away. I'm actually glad they're doing this Facts of Life unit, because I have a lot of questions about this stuff, and I don't have a reliable way of getting answers. Just about everything I know in this department comes from Albert Sandy, and I'm starting to wonder if he's been feeding me bad information. Like last week, he told everyone at the lunch table that it's medically impossible for a girl to fart. Well, I know that's not true because of the time Mom hugged Aunt Dorothy on Christmas Eve. A toot heard around the world. Anyway, today was the first day of the Facts of Life unit. And sure enough, Nurse Powell sent the kids whose parents wouldn't sign their permission slips down to the library to be special helpers for the day. The rest of us were pretty excited, because we couldn't wait to hear all the juicy stuff Nurse Powell was about to tell us. But it didn't go the way I expected at all. Nurse Powell put some charts up on the easel and started talking about zygotes and chromosomes and a whole bunch of other scientific nonsense. I kept waiting for her to tell us this was all a big joke and then get to the good stuff. But it never happened. So I'm guessing the school is just trying to confuse us to make us lose interest. Anyway, if the school is trying to confuse us, they're doing a pretty good job. At lunch, we tried to explain what we learned in the Facts of Life unit to the kids who didn't get their permission slip signed, and we couldn't agree on a single thing. Saturday. Another thing Dad's in charge of now that Mom's back in school is taking us kids to our dentist appointments. Most kids don't like going to the dentist, but I actually look forward to it. I've been going to the same dentist since I was 2 years old, and they are totally my type of operation. Their sign actually reads, "Tender Hugs Pediatric Dental Care. We cater to cowards." Tall Pines Shopping Mall. But the main reason I like going to the dentist is because I am totally in love with a hygienist who works there, Rachel. Rachel always lectures me about brushing and flossing and all that, but she's so cute that it's hard to take her seriously. When she'd say, "Your gums are in very bad shape. You're going to need to floss every day from now on," I'd just say, "Okay." Mom's always getting after me about flossing, too. She says that if I don't take better care of my teeth, I'm going to end up with dentures before I go to college. I've been thinking about that, and maybe false teeth wouldn't be such a bad thing. If I had dentures, I could have someone else take care of my teeth, like my mom, and I could spend the extra time doing something I actually enjoy. The only problem with being in love with your hygienist is that you only get to see her every 6 months when you get your teeth cleaned, so I have to make the most of every visit. The last time I had an appointment, I looked Rachel in the eye the whole time she cleaned my teeth so she could see I was definitely interested. This morning, I actually went out and bought some cologne to make an extra good impression on her. So when Dad told me to get in the car, I was ready. But Dad drove right past my dentist's office and got on the highway. I told him that he had missed the turn and that Tender Hugs Dental Care was back the other way. But Dad said, "I'm too old to keep going to a kid's dentist." So starting today, he was switching me over to his dentist, Dr. Kagan. I got a chill up my spine when he said that name. I've seen Dr. Kagan's billboards on the highway, and I get the impression he has a totally different approach than Tender Hugs. His signs say, "Dr. Salazar Kagan, Oral Surgery and General Dentistry, Root Canals, Abscess Drainage, Bone Grafting." And a quote, "Because bad oral health is nothing to smile about." I tried to get Dad to change his mind, but he said he already did the paperwork to switch me over and there was no turning back. I thought about making a run for it, but Dad must have known what I was thinking because he locked the car doors. Dr. Kagan's office was even scarier than I pictured it. He didn't have any coloring books or toys or the kinds of things they have in the Tender Hugs waiting room. He had all these posters of ugly teeth and hideous mouths full of gum disease that said, "You'd better hope you flossed," and "Gum disease. It's probably already too late." I couldn't stop shuddering. Dr. Kagan was waiting for me in his office, and all his sharp metal instruments and drills were right out in the open for me to see when I walked in, so I could tell this guy wasn't fooling around. After I sat down in the chair, Dr. Kagan started grilling me about my eating and drinking habits. He actually got mad when I told him I drink soda, and he went in the side room and brought out a jar filled with brown liquid that had a rotten tooth in it. He told me this is what happened to a real tooth when it was left in a jar of soda for 24 hours. I told Dr. Kagan I would make sure I never left my teeth in a jar of soda overnight. I'm pretty sure he thought I was being sarcastic, but I was just trying to show him I was paying attention. Then he cleaned my teeth. I started to panic. Because if there's one person you don't want to be mad at you, it's the guy who's got metal tools poking around in your mouth. At one point, Dr. Kagan started doing x-rays. He put a piece of plastic between my teeth and told me to bite down. Then he took an x-ray and got the next piece of plastic ready. After two or three x-rays, I started to get the hang of it. And so when Dr. Kagan did my molars, I bit down on the plastic before he even told me to. At least I thought it was the plastic. It turns out it was actually Dr. Kagan's finger, and he screamed, "Aye!" as I chomped down. Well, if he was mad before, it was nothing compared to this. Dr. Kagan told me to go out to the waiting room while he worked on my diagnosis. I was pretty sure he was going to come back and tell Dad I needed to get a root canal or something, so he could get even with me. But Dr. Kagan actually did something even worse. He told Dad I needed to take major corrective measures for my overbite, and he gave Dad a pamphlet that read, "Your child needs headgear." Dr. Kagan said I would need to wear my headgear at all times, especially during the day when I'm at school. So obviously, he's trying to ruin my social life. Monday. When I woke up this morning, I couldn't find my headgear where I left it, so I had to go to school without it. Not that I'm complaining or anything. In health class, Nurse Powell told us we were going to be starting a new unit about parenting. She said that being a mother or a father is a big responsibility, and that in this unit, we were going to learn that taking care of a baby is no piece of cake. Then she took out a carton of eggs. She said each one of us was going to have to take our egg home and return it to class the next day. And the rule was that we had to return our egg to her in perfect shape, with no cracks in it or anything. Now, I don't know what a chicken egg has to do with a baby, but this is one of those situations that make me wonder if I'd be getting a better education if Mom and Dad switched me over to private school. Then Nurse Powell said this egg thing was going to count for 25% of our grade. Well, when Nurse Powell mentioned grades, I got really nervous. I'm already failing algebra, and I don't need to flunk out of health, too. So I knew I was going to have to keep my egg safe. The other boys didn't seem too worried about their grades, judging by what happened after class let out. They had a big egg fight. I heard it took the janitor all afternoon to scrub the yolks off the lockers. The only boy besides me who didn't break his egg right away was Rowley, who tucked it in his shirt pocket and said, "Come along, Rowley Jr." I didn't have a shirt pocket or anywhere safe to put my egg, so I needed to figure out something quick. I ended up getting a huge wad of toilet paper from the bathroom and stuffing it into my backpack for cushioning. I had to take some of my books out so they wouldn't crush the egg, so I guess that means I won't be doing my history homework tonight. I'm nervous around eggs anyway, because of an incident that happened last year. My family got invited to the Snellas' house for another one of their kids' half-birthday parties. The Snellas' had a table set up with all sorts of food, and most of it looked too fancy for me. But I knew Mom would think it was rude if I didn't put something on my plate. The only thing I could actually recognize was the deviled eggs, because I had them at Grandma's house a couple of times. I put about 10 of them on my plate, but when I bit into one, I gagged. The deviled eggs at the Snellas' house didn't taste anything like the ones Grandma makes, and now I had a whole plate full of them. So I waited until no one was looking, and then I dumped all the deviled eggs in this plastic plant in the dining room. I got away with it, but a few weeks later, Mrs. Snella told Mom there was a really bad smell in their house and they couldn't figure out where it was coming from. At first, Mr. and Mrs. Snella thought the smell was coming from the carpet, so they hired a cleaner to come shampoo the rug. But that didn't solve the problem, and they thought maybe a squirrel or a mouse died in their walls, so they had a carpenter come in to try to find it. After a few weeks, I guess they couldn't take the smell anymore, so they moved out. And I have to admit, I felt a little bit guilty when I saw they were taking their plastic plant with them. Ever since, I've been trying to figure out how to sneak some deviled eggs into Fregley's house. Tuesday. Yesterday, when I got home, I put my egg in my sock drawer, but then I realized it wouldn't be safe in there. Whenever I have something new, Manny finds a way to get to it and wreck it. In fact, it only took a day and a half for Manny to find my headgear. And I don't care what Dr. Kagan says, there's no way I'm putting that thing in my mouth again. I thought about hiding the egg at the top of my closet, but that wouldn't stop Manny. I hid some comic books up there once, but that boy can climb like a monkey. What I realized is that the more I put into hiding something, the better chance Manny has of finding it. So I decided to hide my egg in an obvious spot where he would never think to look. I put it in the refrigerator on the second shelf. But this morning, I opened the refrigerator to get my egg, and it wasn't where I left it. I went into a panic, and I asked Mom if she'd seen Manny take my egg out of the refrigerator. But Mom said she was the one who took it, and that's what she was making me for breakfast. All of a sudden, I felt a little sick to my stomach. I realized that if I couldn't even take care of an egg for 24 hours, I definitely have no business ever being a parent. When I got to school, I noticed that all the girls in my health class had gotten their eggs to school safely. Some of the girls were carrying theirs around in little pouches they'd sewn, and a few of them had even accessorized their eggs with sparkles and glitter and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure the point of the lesson was to teach us how hard it is to take care of a baby, so I don't think the girls were really getting the message. I was thinking about swiping Rowley's egg when he wasn't looking and passing it off as my own, but he had drawn all over his in crayon, "I am Rowley Jr." So that wasn't an option. When Nurse Powell came to my desk, I pulled out the plastic baggie that had my scrambled egg in it, but she didn't seem too impressed. "Can I at least get partial credit?" I asked. "So I guess that means I'm probably going to be in summer school to repeat health class." Nurse Powell congratulated everyone who kept their eggs in perfect condition overnight. Then she collected all the eggs and threw them in the trash. Well, that sent Rowley and the girls into hysterics. All I can say is, this whole episode has got me seriously concerned about the next generation of parents in our country. Friday. This afternoon, there was a knock on the door, and when I opened it, I was pretty surprised to see Grandpa standing there. I was kind of confused, because he had his overnight bag with him. But when I turned around and saw Mom and Dad with their luggage, I figured out what was going on. Mom and Dad said they haven't gotten to spend a lot of time together lately, so they decided to go on a romantic weekend getaway. They asked Grandpa to come by and watch us while they were gone. I wish they didn't have to go and throw the word romantic in there, because that part was definitely too much information for me. Mom and Dad don't trust me and Roderick to be home alone, because the last time they left us on our own, Roderick had a huge party. Whenever Mom and Dad go away, they usually leave us with Grandma, but Grandma's on a cruise with her friends, so that's why we got stuck with Grandpa. Mom and Dad don't give us any advance warning when they go away. For their anniversary, we didn't even know they were gone until they called saying, "We're in Hawaii." The last time they left us at our own house with Grandpa was when me and Roderick were really little. I don't remember everything that went wrong that week, but I do remember that he dropped me off for t-ball practice at the wrong time and at the wrong field. I don't think Roderick was crazy about the idea of having Grandpa as a babysitter, because the second Mom and Dad left, Roderick took off in his loaded diaper van. Unfortunately, I don't have a van or a driver's license of my own, so I was stuck playing gin rummy with Grandpa and Manny. Manny went straight to bed, even though it was only 4:30 in the afternoon, so that left just me and Grandpa. Grandpa made grilled cheese sandwiches with the crust cut off for dinner, which I haven't had since I was really little. We watched some TV, but then at 7 o'clock, Grandpa shut it off and asked me if I wanted him to read me a story. I haven't had a bedtime story since I was in kindergarten, but I didn't want to hurt Grandpa's feelings, so I